on 1116 SEN. The Bush and the Burbs with Paul Daffy for Abus, the brand chosen by security professionals. If you love it, lock it with Abus.
It is time for Bush and the Burbs, brought to you by Abus Locks. We've extolled their virtues, and I now can, from personal experience, tell you that my bike rack is locked with an Abus lock, and so far, no thefts. It's a multi-bike bike rack that we thought would be best secured with a lock because we want to keep it accessible, and so far, so good, no one has breached the security lines. What more can I say for the company that has been since 1924 Europe's best and since Sunday afternoon the fine family's favourite? Good afternoon, or should I say late evening, to you, Daff.
G'day, Fonny.
Now, I've got to pump up your excellent podcasts on PD.
PD Footy.
PDFooty.com. .au?
That's right, yep, .au.
I have to pump it up because it serves my own purposes, because you very kindly interviewed me on Monday and it's up for listen.
That's right.
It's a bit self-indulgent for me to say, go and listen to me, but there's other very good ones there. I don't know whether you need to hear more of me if you're copying me every night, but who else, more importantly, who else is on there?
Funny, I do a local footy roundup on Sunday mornings, but during the week I do an hour with a football identity. So I've had Dennis Pagan, Terry Wheeler, Fred Goldsmith, the 1955 Brownlow medalist, Bill Doher, the ex-umpire, Shane Wakelin, yourself, and this week it's David Whedon, the renowned assistant coach and coach of the coaches. But given its football identities, I thought there's a few bigger football identities in the Melbourne media than yourself.
There are quite a few.
Yeah, well, you're probably the most interesting. And it was great. We spoke for an hour and a half. I edited it down to a bit over an hour. And it could have gone for another 2 hours, you know. And you talk about stuff that you don't talk about on air. The people will learn stuff they don't know.
Yeah, look, I've said this before to you privately, but I may as well say it on air. There is, in my world of evening broadcasting and of listening to just about every football broadcaster at some point in time, there might be the equal of, but there's no better interviewer than Daff. And this is not a mutual sort of...
What is it?
I had a rude term for it, but it's not a love-in. I say to Paul because, you know, he's to the point, he is fearless. There have been times I've done interviews with you. I remember when we interviewed one of them, Perry Meeker from Ardmona.
Oh, right.
On the back of a pretty nasty, not irregular occurrence for the Ardmona Football Club during the Meeker period. But remember, we interviewed Perry Meeker, and there were questions that I was just thinking, how do I broach the topic of, and whilst I'm thinking of how to do it, Daff's just gone straight in with a very quick, short, and to the point question of something along the lines of, Perry, after your ninth goal, there was a ground invasion and et cetera, et cetera. And on, you know, and I just thought, you got balls and you've also got your timing right, because he answered it and maybe he was taken back by the direct form of questioning, but it's something I've always been very, very much a fan of. So I can recommend with no fear of being, certainly in terms of the questioning and the subject matter, beyond myself, I've got no fear of being cold biased if people listen. You're a bloody good interview and you've got some really good subjects there. So pdfooty.com.au, PD being the man's
initials. Did I ask anything you didn't expect or you had not thought about? Or
yeah, more onion rings. I didn't think you were...
Fine is a good cook too, listeners. Yeah,
I made a steak. Whew, that was tricky. You've really got to give credit to Gary's Meats and also the cows that bore the calf that grew into the cow that became the steak, I guess.
Where's Gary's Meats?
Paran Market, great friend of the shows. Let's start talking a bit of footy. We've got Wayne Brasher on the line. We'll get very quickly to the Eastern Football League, where there were a number of interesting results. But I noted in the Ammos that Old Kerry had a maybe season-defining victory. It was a very important win. And that was for a side that hasn't been synonymous with success in A grade. It looks like they're going to play finals and could be a real presence.
They've never been in A grade grand final. They've played finals once. They went back to B grade and last year came second, so they've come up to O grade and they've exceeded expectations this year. They had a big test on Saturday when they played Old Zavs, who are not known for giving up leads, given their amazing success in the last 20 years. So Zavs led by 8 points at three-quarter time, but Kerry have kicked 5 unanswered goals in the last quarter to win by 20 points. Now, I spoke to Cam Howitt for the podcast on Sunday morning from the airport lounge. He was about to fly out to New York. This is the way Emmett is now. The Premier A, B and C now have a two-week break, which is unprecedented in footy at any level.
Why do they have a two-week break?
It's quite normal to have a one-week break for the representative game in early July. But this year they're having 2 weeks. I don't know. I suppose.
Well, to accommodate the oft-told story in the MOs of we have player drains as many of our players mid-season go overseas for various reasons.
Well, I actually tweeted today. I said, you know, unprecedented two-week break. Ski field jokes are out of date.
Yep.
Planes to London and New York are full of footballers. So, I mean, clubs must have got sick of players just leaving mid-season on a bit of a holiday. I know Eastern Footy League clubs and Essendon District clubs are also losing players, you know, for a week or two mid-season because they go to Europe for a bit of a break or Bali or wherever they go.
So I can see that not everybody has 4 children.
And some people have disposable cash as well.
Yeah, good on them.
And they have no kids' disposable cash. Anyway, so I spoke to Cam Howard. Basically, he was the last person on the plane. I held him up unknowingly, but...
Last call for Mr. Cam Howard. Mr. Cam Howard, this is your final call.
He said, look, I've got to go. They're calling me onto the plane. He was going over to see a mate who works for the ICC, lives in New York. His mate said, can you bring over a footy? So I was going to maintain... I said, you're going to have a bit of a break. You're going to maintain your fitness. He's certain he was going to maintain his fitness. But you can imagine some clubs will come back prime for the rest of the season. Some clubs are a little bit off the boil. So it'll be interesting to see how they react to this 2 weeks.
Has he been in New York before?
I didn't ask. I don't know. Cam's a school teacher, so he's got these 2 weeks off. That's why he's gone.
Because with the wife having some family in New York, we used to go regularly to New York. Not anymore. 4 kids, did I mention? And at this time of the year. And it is often, most of the time, incredibly hot. Imagine a 35-degree day here, which is the temperature they get. And then in the mirrored, glassed, concrete jungle is the only world of it. It's a brilliant place in New York, but the heat during this time of the year, and if Cam's planning to go for a jog and a kick, if he's not used to that heat, it radiates up as well from the ground.
Mm.
And then at night, those vents on the street are releasing steam, and it looks like the whole thing's sort of like breathing and burbling, and it's cooking underneath you. It's quite the roast.
The cauldron. I mean, but didn't clubs go to Darwin this year to put themselves in a hot environment in which to train? So this might be a good thing.
Which clubs were then? How did that work out for them?
Did Geelong go up there?
Yeah, how are they tracking at the present? I don't know.
About expected, I reckon.
Probably one week good, one not so good. But I'm not for the... I used to have that theory when I played cricket.
What's that? I
played cricket in some really hot weather, and for a couple of years I had this ridiculous theory, and I used to take the field with a jumper on, my sweater. And people go, what are you doing? It's 38 degrees, you're insane. I said, yeah, but when you're all boiling hot and I'm boiling hot, I can take a layer off and I'll feel great. And it was completely ridiculous. A, I got hotter than anybody quicker, and B, by the time it came to taking it off, my resolve and my reserves had all been depleted. So
This is the unconventional thinking that is evident throughout this interview I've done with you, Finey.
That didn't work.
It's a one-off.
Let's catch up with our Eastern Football League media team member, Wayne Brasher, because I don't think they're taking 2 weeks off in the EFL.
No, they're not.
They're all business.
I assume they're not.
They're all business. Not business class, business. How are you, Wayne?
Good evening, Mark. How are you?
Very good. I had a look through your results and there were interesting goings on in all grades as well. I'm pleased to see that Norwood are on the bounce and bouncing back nicely.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, last Saturday, they actually got beaten for the second time this season by Roval.
Then I'm not correct. I'm actually thinking of the big win they had the week before over Baldwin.
Yeah, well, that was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
so,
sorry about that.
Yeah, so, but actually, finally, we've got four great games coming up in all four divisions this weekend, and it gets none bigger than our EFL game day, match of the day between Baldwin and Vermont. This is the marquee clash of the two powerhouse clubs, which sees Vermont third place travel down to SEN Park to take on the top of the ladder team in Baldwin. Baldwin have had a couple of good wins in the last couple of weeks against North Ringwood and Montrose, and have solidified their position at the top of the ladder, whilst Vermont came back to earth a little bit against Noble Park a couple of weeks ago, but got back on the winners list against South Croydon by 40 points last week.
So, the Roeville result really pricked my interest, I suppose, because Norwood had been on the fly. What was the reaction in NFL circles to that win by Roeville over Norwood?
Well, actually, it really wasn't. There were a lot of pundits out there, Paul, that actually thought that Roeville was still a good chance. Early on in the season, they played a close 3-point victory. But it seems like that both Norwood and Roeville match up pretty well against each other. And there's a really good rivalry between those two sides. And Roval just at the moment seem to have the game plan and the playing personnel to seem to be able to match it on Norwood on the day.
Okay, so it was fourth versus fifth, so it wasn't a huge surprise.
No, it wasn't a huge surprise because Roval can boast the fact that they've had some good wins over quite a few of the top sides. They ran Baldwin to 9 points early on the season, as well as having victories over Vermont and Norwood as well. So Their form stacks up quite well in the top, where they stand in the top five.
All right, Division 2 this week, Wayne. Bayswater and Waverley Blues are both coming off big victories.
Yeah, this is a really, really interesting game. There's three sides are vying for that fourth position at the moment, and two of these sides are going up against each other this week. As you said, Paul, both sides coming off over 100-point victories last week. Wayne McInerney and Matt Cunningham and Jack Cullinan were all amongst the goals for Bayswater last week, while Justin Perkins and Ben Carboni for Waverley Blues also got amongst it for the Waverley Blues. Really good contest here. Bayswater have held on to fourth position now for quite a few weeks and are still treading along very nicely. Waverley Blues, on the other hand, have tended to mix their form a little bit. One week they look good, the next week they sort of fall into inconsistency. Really interesting game set for decision at Bayswater over this Saturday. I fancy Bayswater in this one. I just think that their form is a little bit more consistent.
And just Division 3, the Basin and South Belgrave, it's a clash between two teams in the top five?
This is a very intense rivalry between these two sides. The Basin are taking on a rejuvenated South Belgrave side who've won their last four. Based on the form of Tommy Helen in the back line. He's been absolutely sensational. Lee Odomat, the captain, and Alan Spakins have come back into form with kicking goals in recent times. And the addition of Josh Dyson and Anthony Bernardo to that forward line has really added some steel to for South Belgrave. And also they're starting to get some players back as well that they had out injured. So it's looking good for the Saints. But on the other hand, the Basin are in very good form as well. Jackson Keane and Aaron Finlay are in great form as well, with kicking many, many goals in the last four games. You know, look, I think by the time 5 o'clock comes on Saturday afternoon, South Belgrave, who sit a game clear in fifth position, will know exactly where they stand.
And Division 4, can Warrandyte hold off the rising Kilsyth?
This is another very interesting contest. Warrandyte have taken all before them this season. They haven't put a foot wrong. Kilsyth have won their last six based on the fact that Jay Sherlock has been in absolute sensational form for them. He's kicked 34 goals in his last six games and has been spearheading the Kilsyth attack. Warrandyte have their own spearhead in former Vermont star Ash Rowe, who's also kicked 43 goals for the season. He's in great form and seems to relish when he's the number one go-to forward. as his co-forward Luke Dunn is out injured at the moment.
You've been around for a while, haven't you, Wayne?
I have. Mark, yeah.
Pardon me.
Well answered, Wayne.
Are you familiar with a player? I think he might have played for Scoresby and then Waverley Blues called Bo Coyle.
Yeah, I have heard of Bo Coyle, yes. He used to play for Scoresby. He was part of that very good Scoresby side a few years ago when they were challenging for premierships in Division One.
Well, he bobbed up in Club 18 second grade amateur football on the weekend for Albert Park.
Oh, really?
He didn't just bob up. He was the most dominant individual I've ever seen on an adult football ground.
I'll tell you what.
He kicked seven out of 11. And four of them would have been worthy. Any AFL footballer would have been proud as punch to kick some of those goals.
That's a pretty fair effort, Mark. I think Scoresby Football Club could actually do with Bo Coyle back in their attack at the moment.
Yeah, he's not a kid. He's not a baby. There was grey hairs, but he was just the absolute archetypal half-forward flanker. At one stage, they were 9-14, and I'm certain he had kicked six or seven of them and given Joe the Gooses over the top for the other two. So the rest of the team had managed 0-14, and he had been responsible for 9 straight.
Well, if he can keep contributing to Albert Park's successes and kick more goals throughout the year, he'd be a great recruit for him.
My word, he would. He's a superstar. Wayne, thank you so much for joining us. We'll catch up next week.
You certainly will. Thanks, Viney.
Good on you.
Thanks, Wayne.
Yeah, he was something else. Gee, I mean, you know, the guys there aren't that fit, and some don't train, and some are just having a go. Some have got a bit of ability from days gone by, and others are trying to crack it in the reserves. But this bloke was, well, he's played, obviously he was a good EFL First Division player for a good team, and it showed. It was fascinating to watch him play.
A cut above. What were you doing there? Were you umpiring?
Umpiring? I was supposed to umpire at North Old Boys. But right. I got the call that I would, did I want to just do the local Club 18 game?
For Ormond, this is?
For Ormond. I thought, that's odd. Normally, if I'm offered to travel, they'll snap it up. But then I worked out why very quickly.
Was it?
Because the something I wanted to do, I now won't be able to do, and that is umpire Mal Michael in his comeback game. Uh-huh. He had one game in the Resies. They had a comfortable win, and the triple premiership player, I'm sure, will be in the ones for the rest of the year. But, yeah, he played in the... You don't get too many triple premiership AFL footballers in D1 reserves in the AMOs, do you?
No, you don't. I can't think of any.
They did on the weekend.
How old is he now? That's 11 years ago. 12 years ago he played in the last
I can tell you, however old he is, he's one of those...
He's looking good.
Baby face, good, you know, he really looks well. Mm. Such a nice chap. Just, you know, so friendly and up for a chat. Anybody at the club, obviously he's a bit of a magnet. People, oh, that's Mel. And go up and have a chat, and he's a really lovely bloke. Welcome back to The Bush and the Burbs, and... It feels as though 30 seconds ago, because that's how long it was, Thanasi Kokkinakis was aiming to break Meyer to take the second set. Well, in about 15 seconds, Meyer held serve. That was the quickest service game you'll ever see. And they have now begun the 11th game of the second set in what could be a true Wimbledon marathon. In a moment, we'll be catching up with Gary Woodhams, the president of the Sorrento Football Club. There's change in the wind for not only clubs but leagues, as you may have caught wind of the AFL's plan for the future, which really divides suburban Melbourne and beyond into regions, and teams are geographically placed in those regions. It's definitely something that Cricket Victoria want to see happen to cricket competitions, and we'll see exactly how well it's being accepted by local clubs, whether they're embracing it or running from it at a million miles an hour. Just before we do that, anything interesting happen out in the bush this week, Def?
In the bush. I actually spoke to Maurice Mullen, the president of Koroit, on the podcast on Sunday morning. They had a great top-of-the-table clash with Warrnambool, winning by 12 points. Isaac Templeton best on ground. I went to Essendon and Hawthorn on Saturday, and Martin Gleeson struck me, the number 35 for Essendon. And I thought he was Essendon's best player in the second half.
That's a big Koroit name, Gleeson.
It's a really famous Koroit name. So with that in mind, I spoke to Morris after seeing Martin. He's Dom and Quinton's cousin, and I think Adrian Gleeson's cousin as well. Yep. And so they had a big win. Bacchus Master fed Melbourne by 1 point.
Just on names, clubs and names, Gleeson's from Koroit. See, I've always associated the name Daffy with Camperdown.
Yes, there's a lot of Daffys in horse racing in Camperdown, that's right.
But a real Western district name. And this goes back to early settlement, doesn't it?
It does, yes. My family, you know, 1850s or 60s, yeah.
Are there other names, obviously Danaher and Angari, but are there other names synonymous with clubs, with football teams of certain regions? We might explore that next week.
Every club has got a famous. The Roses with Nia, for example.
Yep.
That's one.
Lappin's at Chilton.
Lappin's definitely at Chilton. There's, you know, 9 players in one of their premiership teams.
That's great because Lappin is an anglicised version of the French word lapin, even though it has two P's, which means rabbit. So one
of the Lappin, 1982, 9 premiership players were Lappins.
Well, somebody's breeding like Lappins up there.
All of them nicknamed, and one of them was Bunny, as in the French for rabbit.
Well, that's perfect. And of course, you would say that there should be some strong link, a bond between Canilio of the
West of
Gold Coast. Canilio's a Gold.
No, GWS.
GWS. So Mira's the Gold Coast one. Stephen Canilio of the Gold Coast and Matthew Lappin, because Canilio is rabbit in Italian.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, I've got a
Bunny Canilio. Canilio.
Yeah. I'll ask you a quiz question and see if Peaky, who's driving in, maybe knows it, or the listeners. Which very popular music song, you know, which famous singer could, by rights, have been a member of the Carpenters? See if anybody knows. Okay, but that is left of centre. We are going straight down to the Sorrento Football Club with Gary Woodhams. Good evening, Gary.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Okay.
Strange quizzes being asked as we prepare to speak to you, but the question for you is not music-based, it is future-based, and that is that there is a... Down your way, there's been a lot of dividing and splitting of leagues and of teams, and settled would not be the best way to describe Mornington Peninsula football, and maybe the way forward is not in the hands of the current administration, but in the hands of the big AFL.
That seems to be the way it's going. We, Mornington Peninsula Nepean Football League, last year had sort of 3 divisions, separate leagues, and Casey Cardinia saw the writing on the wall. They opted out, and we've gone the same way this year in the Nepean section of it, and Peninsula have voted now to come out and go into the AFL South East Commission.
So even the Mornington Peninsula League is going to get out of the Mornington Peninsula Executive and Administration. Is that right, Gary?
Yeah, well, I think there's only 5 independent leagues left now. The rest have gone with various commissions around Victoria.
Okay.
And I think it's got so big and semi-professional these days, amateur boards, they'll give their time basically for nothing. And I think it's the way it's going, it's becoming much more professional, and that's what the AFL South East Commission offers us.
So I think just to give some background, I think there's 8 commissions, which are regional centres, and 5 sub-centres. And basically the AFL Vic Country provides administrative synergies, or that's the business term, I suppose, isn't it? They basically help out with administration. So
yeah, well, they say their economies of scale are such.
Economies of scale, that's it.
Run 3 or 4 old leagues into the one administration and save everyone a bit of money and add a lot of professionalism to it.
So why are you going to follow, or why are you and your fellow presidents from the Nepean League keen to follow that route, Gary?
Well, we just had a lot of issues. I don't want to go into each of them, but and the commission just looked a much more attractive proposition for us for the future. As I said, they're basically the boards. There's independent boards. We still have our own board, a representation on a board. But you know, there's people like Roger Hampson, ex CEO at Essendon. He's involved with the commission's board that'll be administering us. So it's just, as I said, I think the days of the amateur running of the boards, people giving their time and doing everything basically for nothing is probably gone now, and the economies of scale dictate that we go with something like the commission.
Gary, how would this impact on teams, for example, that you play currently in your competition? Would you be seeing any teams leaving, and would there be a redrafting of boundaries? In other words, would Sorrento have new teams to play against, or maybe lose some traditional opponents that they've always played against?
The way it is, we've got our side of the peninsula on the other side, the Western Port side. Teams like Tyabe have struggled, really struggled the last couple of years, but Sorrento was like that in the late 90s. We almost had to give it away or amalgamate, and teams go up and down, but we see everyone staying intact and keeping all the teams we've got now together.
Gary, is there any fear of homogenisation? Like everyone going under the AFL Victoria banner, it's sort of the individual nuances from league to league and around the state, they might be lost. Is that a consideration?
Well, I haven't really thought about that, but there's always a danger of that happening. But we believe the clubs will still have their input through the individual boards. Mm-hmm. So if we don't like it, we can always get out. we're quite plain about that. The commission, they're here to help us, not to dictate to us so much. We like the model they've got, and that's where we'll be going.
So this hasn't been a rancorous uprising. It's been a steady process.
I couldn't say there hasn't been any rancor, but in all these sorts of things, there's a certain degree of angst. But with the alternative now, with the South East Commission, it seems the logical way to go.
So when will it be ratified, or what's the next step?
Well, our Nepean teams have all voted for it. There was one abstention. Somerville is subject to some points deliberations. They abstained, and they probably had to in those circumstances. We were basically unanimous, and we presented that to the MPNFL board, who've taken that under consideration. Peninsula had a vote on it last week, and they were, I think, 8-4, 1 or 2 abstaining, and 2 or 3 against.
So, are these boards voting for their own extinction or extinguishing? I mean, are they basically summonsing the executioner?
Well, not really. I think our board would have liked to have continued on, but they'd recognise the extent of the size of the business now, that the model's probably moving to the more professional aspect with AFL South East.
And what happens to these? They sound like sort of hard-working, but maybe past their prime board members. It just seems, I can imagine them sort of all sitting there and what do we do now, and just being shipped off to various parts of the peninsula. While their golden years away, sitting on a park bench somewhere.
I spoke to one of them today, and they're out there a bit disillusioned with it all, because it's hard to get people to go on these boards.
Yeah.
Basically,
that's
people
true.
in the leagues are affiliated with their clubs.
But will they have a role to play with the South East Division of AFL Victoria
South East Commission?
Yeah.
Probably not, but they have the opportunity, if they want to put their hand up in there, to nominate to go on to that board. That board will consist of 3 AFL South East nominees and 2 from the clubs. And so they might want to nominate themselves to go on there.
Gary, just before we go, I'd love to get you on to talk about Sorrento Footy Club itself. And one of the things is you become famous for the president's lunch. Now, some of the guests, David Koch, Damien Oliver, George McNeil, Greg Champion, Cole Kinnear, Judge Betty King, Sam Solomon. This week, Sorrento versus Hastings, who's the speaker at the Sorrento lunch?
They try to keep me in the dark about it.
All right.
But I think it's a scribe who writes about a lot of crime, I'm told. So Yes, all those. I mean, George McNeil was just unbelievable. He's the Scottish Stall gift winner. He was quite extraordinary. We've had numerous, I mean, you name of Eddie Maguire and Kevin Sheedy. We've had them all down to give their time mostly freely. So
it almost seems fitting after that list that you've got a crime writer.
I think it's Mr. Sylvester.
I was going to say, it sounds like
is it Sly.
It sounds like Sly of the old underworld.
Yeah.
Sorrento's become not a destination club necessarily for players, even though you've recruited very well in recent years, but it's a bit of a place to be. And I know that the Schwartzes, I think, were involved down there. Is that
right? Yeah, Troy's still coaching. And, but, you know, people say that we go out and recruit and do all this, but we have no less than 16 kids from our junior club in every one of our last seven premierships. So we do top up with a couple, but they become local boys as well. Luke Tapscott hopefully plays his first game for us this week.
Well, it's school holidays, and even though it's winter, I know plenty of people still head to their place in Sorrento. So if you are listening and you're Sorrento-bound over the next couple of weeks, A-Rod might be going. Do you go down to Sorrento? I know blokes chase girls down to the peninsula, and it doesn't matter what the weather is. Then who are you playing this week?
It's a huge game this week, Hastings.
Oh, well, absolutely. So for the many people listening that would be heading down that way over the school holidays, catch a local game of football, and you couldn't do better than Sorrento versus Hastings. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be on. Thank you very much.
Gary Williams there, president of Sorrento. And, yeah, it's a combination of the – it's interesting around there because it's the well-heeled sort of holiday house owners, and some of those houses are magnificent, and then the locals who are your more bona fide peninsulans.
Yeah, the tradesmen, of course. But drinks in the club is a very high-powered affair at Sorrento, apparently.
Yeah, it's a known place where Mike Sheehan, does he get down there?
Mike does.
Yeah, it's a known. It's known.
Pat
where
Smith, Eddie Maguire. Yes.
Deals are done. Legs are broken.
can't imagine Mike breaking many legs, but anyway.
No, it's not Mike who breaks the legs.
Okay.
It's old Patty Smith.
Or Patrick.
Thanks for another great Bush on the Verbs.
Thanks, Paul.
As always. And we'll catch up next Thursday.
No, next Monday. There's this Thursday and next Thursday. So
of these interminable, insufferable Thursday games. Another two of them.
Another two, yeah.
I like them. The games are good, but the disruption to regular broadcasting has been a bit of a pain in the proverbial. Still, wonderful to have you on a Monday.